Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Talk with a Doc. This is the show where we bring common questions to our medical experts for insight and information. And when it comes to parenthood and the care of moms and babies, Providence really is all in. So all mothers, all parents, all births, and all babies, our goal really is compassionate and individualized care for all families. And we know that part of most pregnancy and postpartum journey is breastfeeding and all that that entails. We wanted to give the information and advice that you really need when it comes to taking care of you and your baby during this time. So again, welcome in. I am your host, Valerie Cordes, and with me here today is our special guest, Dr. Maureen Anderson, who is a certified nurse midwife, doctor of nursing practice, and master of science in teaching, an internationally certified lactation consultant. Holy moly, this woman knows exactly what she is talking about. She is the perfect guest to bring on the show. And today we'll be exploring the value of breastfeeding for you and your infant and how it affects your mental health, your self-care, the importance of really making sure that you're supported in this journey. So welcome to the show, Maureen. We're so glad that you're here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm running out of space on my badge with all the letters. I've collected them over many, many years. So,
yeah, I can imagine. And it just speaks to the passion, I think, that you have about this topic. So just really excited to dive in. But would like to have, if you don't mind, just sharing at a high level what your career and maybe a little bit of your personal journey too has been in getting to this point.
Sure. I started out not in medicine at all. I started out in storytelling through acting. That was my first background, which is why I like talking to people so much. But then I was an elementary school teacher in New York City for several years. I did a program called New York City Teaching Fellows, which is similar to Teach for America, but just in New York. I was a first and second grade teacher, and that's where the Masters of Science in Teaching came in. And when I wanted to pivot and go into more family care and thinking about the family as a whole, I thought of nursing. I went back to school. I became an RN in 2013 and then worked bedside for almost 10 years in the mother baby unit at OHSU. So that was immediate postpartum care. I was also part of the labor and delivery team there. So I was a labor and delivery bedside nurse and a mother baby bedside nurse. I got my IBCLC, which is International Board Certified Lactation Consultant. I got that certification in 2016, right before my own kiddo was born. And as soon as he was born, I forgot everything that went into my head and really benefited from seeing someone else who was not inside my body to give me outside opinions. Another IBCLC after he was born. And I ended up seeing a nurse midwife who was an IBCLC. And I remember walking out of that office and those visits, number one, thinking, oh my gosh, I am so glad that I came to these appointments to have somebody strategize with me and talk to me about what was normal and what wasn't. And also, wow, I didn't know that midwives could do this. And so as I continued my own journey into midwifery, which is advanced degree above my nursing degree, I kept thinking about doing the specific postpartum care. And now I work alongside the person that helped me so much. I cried on the couch in her office so many times. And I trained with her when I started this job at Providence and said, I don't know if you remember me, but you helped me so much. And I was very emotional about it. And she said, I did remember you. Oh my goodness. And now my kiddo is almost 8. And it makes a real difference to me that I can tell our patients that come to the mother baby clinic, I was you. I was crying on the couch and it gets better. You're not crazy. And let's talk about this together. And so I think I'm really blessed and really fortunate to see both sides of this clinic room and know how it feels to be postpartum. And it's just such a wild trip that it's really hard to explain to people until they go through it.
So yeah,
you don't have to have had a heart attack to be a cardiologist, but it helps. You don't have to have had a baby to be a midwife, but it helps. So
yeah. Oh gosh. I love your journey. And I'm assuming that some of the love for what you do and wanting to pursue some of your extended degrees and certifications and everything and education in this came from that personal experience that you had with, you know, the woman that you're working alongside of now. Is that, would you say that that's true as well?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I didn't know that this sort of support existed until I was a participant in it. And I had thought about midwifery as a career goal just because I love working with patients that are pregnant and educating them about their bodies and their power and the awesome things that we can do with uteruses.
Yeah.
But specifically postpartum care wasn't on my radar as being a specialization. So I graduated from midwifery school in 2022 and got the Doctor of Nursing Practice. I am a doctor. It's a doctorate. It's like the terminal degree in nursing. And it means that I studied hospital systems and organization and quality improvement. That is the focus of my doctorate. So I am a doctor, but I feel like I'm a midwife first and then a doctor.
I love that. I love that though. That's really special and sacred, I feel like. So you were mentioning how, you know, some of the resources like you didn't even realize were available maybe during your own experience. So I feel like that's so common, even with friends that I talk to. So I don't actually have kids, but I have friends with kids. And so talking with them, there's, you know, there just isn't a lack of awareness sometimes. And I'm curious, what do you think that comes from? And also, how can we help make sure that we're sharing that awareness and getting out these resources and education into the world?
The lack of awareness sometimes comes because there aren't postpartum specific resources for people.
Mm.
I think that Providence does maternal care really right. And we have such a unique program at Providence where we have this postpartum support system set up. And lots of other spaces don't have that. It's interesting, in maternity care, we're very concerned about the pregnant person all the way through the pregnancy. We're very concerned about the delivery. And then typically you discharge from the hospital and people say, well, we'll see you in 6 weeks. And that is not reality. In reality, the postpartum period lasts for a year, maybe more. In terms of hormones, getting back to where they were pre-pregnancy, adjustment to the role of parenting, feeding is part of that, just this whole new reality for people. And so for us to send people out the door and say, we'll see you in 6 weeks to check your stitches, that is a disservice to people. The American College of Nurse Midwives, which is our governing body, says that we should have ongoing comprehensive postpartum care, at a minimum seeing people at 2 weeks postpartum and then at 6 to 8 weeks postpartum. And what we're able to do in this clinic is really fill in the gaps. It's an interesting role to be in. I'm not a primary care provider for my patients that I see. I'm kind of an outside person saying, hey, have you thought about this? Or maybe you should talk to your OB about this. Or maybe you should talk to the pediatrician about this, and kind of as an alarm bell saying, don't forget that this person could fall through the cracks. So what we do at our clinic, which I think is really special, someone will deliver their baby and be in the hospital. One of our schedulers will come to the room and say, hello, I am from lactation. Would you like to have an appointment with us 24 to 48 hours after you discharge home? So a little bit of time to chill out at home and then come back and see us. And what we're doing is checking the baby's weight, talking about jaundice, which is the number one reason why babies are readmitted to the hospital after delivery, is to manage jaundice.
No idea. Wow.
Yeah, which is really normal. It's a physiologic thing that happens to babies, but we're here to monitor it. It's how our clinic was founded, was to monitor that and to check the physical recovery of the parent. So blood pressure, asking about bleeding, checking in on mental health. And sometimes we're the first providers that people see after they leave the hospital. We're also able to do well child exams for families that are seeing family practice docs within the Providence system. So we're taking some weight off of those family practice clinics that are so busy, and really reducing trips for the families, where instead of having a lactation appointment and then a well child exam, we're able to consolidate those into one, which is something I really love doing for families.
Yeah, that's great. I love how seamless it is too, going from they have their baby and you just come in and offer that as a service right then and there. So they don't have to have that extra reach out to you.
Exactly. We try to make it as easy as possible. It is by no means a requirement. Sometimes people either aren't going to breastfeed, which I know is on our topic list to talk about later today, or they're a super experienced breastfeeder and they're like, nope, I don't really need to come in. And in which case we say, great, see you when we see you. We're here if you have any issues. And it's nice to be able to offer that to people. And I think that that is part of the function of that, is that we have a great infrastructure in place with lots of providers, and we're able to have that sort of flexibility in our schedule.
Yeah, I love that. On that topic of breastfeeding that you just brought up, I have heard so many women just share some of their struggles and some of the challenges that go into breastfeeding that they've experienced. And I think from the friends that I have, like, they've been confused. Sometimes they're just physically and emotionally exhausted. So I'm curious, you know, if you can kind of walk us through, I guess, like, what are some of the things that maybe a new mom can expect when it comes to breastfeeding? And what are some of your top tips that you would give to somebody if they are feeling this challenge and this struggle and the frustration?
Yeah. A lot of my patient education comes from kind of explaining the physiology of what's going on in the body so that we can understand what's happening to us and why it's happening to us. After the baby comes out, the placenta is delivered. The placenta is not only the kind of conduit through which all of the oxygen and nutrients came during the pregnancy, but it's also an enormous gland. It is secreting all of these hormones. And part of the hormone process is that it's secreting hormones as other hormones rise. But then when it is gone, it's almost like being on a teeter-totter and somebody getting off the bottom and you go, woo! And with the placental hormones gone, the other hormones can do their job. They can signal like, okay, it's time to make milk. You are no longer pregnant. You can let go of all of this extra fluid that you've been making the whole time. But it is a wild ride. So some things that we can expect is that it doesn't happen immediately. Milk production tends to happen between day 3 and day 5 of postpartum. There are lots of emotions that are connected with that. And part of it, you mentioned exhaustion, mentally, physically. Everyone cries. My husband often asks me, how many people did you make cry today when I come home? Because so many people cry in our office. And as you can see behind me, we have strategically placed Kleenex in every room, at least one. Actually, we have two in this room. So always at the ready. It never makes me uncomfortable when people cry. Just don't devote energy to trying to stop it. The process of milk making is several steps. First of all, the breast is not considered mature until it lactates. So during pregnancy, usually between week like 17, 19, the lactation tissue kind of starts to wake up and say, oh, okay, we're going to do this. So it starts to make this pre-milk called colostrum. It's heavy in sugars and nutrients and antibodies from the pregnancy that the pregnant person is passing on to the baby. The signal that the body needs to start producing true and mature milk is the removal of what's in there already, so that it sends the signal to the body, okay, the baby's here, they must be eating, and it's time to make mature milk. That process can take several days. So a lot of times people come in and say, I just don't have any milk for my baby. And with a healthy term baby, that's to be expected. Babies are built to kind of weather this storm. They have lots of really slow burning brown fat if they've been inside for the whole time. If they're not medically fragile, then they're completely equipped to get through this transition. That's why it's nice to come in a few days after delivery and put them on the scale and say, how are you adjusting to outside life, baby? Like, sometimes weight can give us lots of clues. We expect babies to lose weight after delivery. Up to 10% is usually really, really normal from their birth weight. So that's some of the calculations we're doing in this clinic and saying, you know, have you gained weight since you went home from the hospital? Are you still losing weight? What are the sequelae of that? Like, have you gotten rid of all the poop that you had inside when you were a fetus? Are you peeing in a way and staying hydrated that we expect. So that's part of what we're all expecting. So really normal for babies to lose weight initially, really normal for parents to not have a huge amount of volume, and that's part of the process. I had a patient yesterday say, I feel like this should be a really natural thing, and I feel like I'm not doing it right, like I need some sort of help. And I said to her what I say to all sorts of people is that we have had lactation consultants as long as we have been lactating. In the olden days, I would have been the old lady that lived on the edge of the village and like helped you and gave you herbs and told you what to do with your baby, and that we don't live in villages like that anymore. So now I live in Northeast Portland and I come here instead. So to need help is so, so normal. And I think we should normalize the idea that you can't do it by yourself. Never was it more clear to me, the whole it takes a village thing, until I brought home my own kid. When I delivered my son, I had been a charge nurse on the mother baby unit. I had an IBCLC. I was a nurse and a specialist in postpartum care, and everyone around me was like, you'll be fine. Don't worry. It's hard. It's so hard. There's no way that you can explain to someone who hasn't been through it the amount of exhaustion, the physical recovery, the emotional turmoil. It is like your life is a snow globe and somebody just shook it up. And not only the snow is flying around, but everything is flying around. Your relationship with your peers, your relationship with your partner, your relationship with your parents. It's all of it is just swirling around you. And so no matter what your background is, to need some help is normal and expected. And we want to help. We're here to help because a lot of us have been through it as parents ourselves that are providers in the clinic or are really experienced clinicians who have specialized in this sort of work. So to need help, that's one of my biggest takeaways, is ask for help. It's really hard to. When you're a grown-up and you're used to paying your bills on time and getting to the bus stop and doing things that you need to do, and all of a sudden you don't know what to do, mm-hmm. It can be a really humbling experience for people. And being able to ask for help is a sign of strength. And so I would encourage people to know that there are lots of people that are around to help.
Yeah, that's so good to hear. And I think it's so validating, especially for women who oftentimes just want to try and do it on their own and be super mom. And they think it's just going to be this thing where, yeah, they're able to do it with ease and there's no issues. And the truth of the matter is that we all are here, or, you know, especially you and your resources, right, are available to help and really support. And that's almost like kind of required in a way, it feels like.
We didn't evolve to live like we do. We right. should probably still be living in groups on the savannah where more than one person was lactating at a time. And right. and there was that little old lady on the edge of your village that knew how to do everything. And that's one of the reasons why I got into midwifery, is to help perpetuate education through like generational loss or other things like that. We just don't live in the way that we used to, and our bodies don't know that. So yeah. That's one thing that I really talk to patients about, is trying to frame things almost through an anthropologic lens of like, we don't live the way that we used to. We don't live the way that our bodies think that we still do. So sometimes we do need outside sources like donor milk, like formula, like getting milk from a friend of yours that's lactating that lives across town and is going to drop it off for you. It is so normal to need more than just you and your partner or you by yourself to kind of launch this new part of your life. So
yeah. And it feels like it just helps with the health of everyone, including the baby, yes, of course, yes. Which is something I want to kind of ask a little bit more about, as far as, you know, obviously we know that there's huge nutritional value to breastfeeding the baby, but what are some of the other benefits that breastfeeding offers to the mom and baby through that process?
Yeah. Benefits, bonding, being close with your baby in that way that you get to hold and snuggle them and they're not crying and they're warm and snuggly. All of that is part of the bonding experience when part of the lactation process involves oxytocin, which we all know kind of is the warm and fuzzy hormone, right? And it helps promote bonding. It's an essential part of lactation where the baby gets to breast, they signal that they want to eat, they suck really fast. It sends a signal to your brain to release oxytocin. The oxytocin comes down to the breast and then it squishes around where you've made the milk and where it's kind of sitting in the breast. But that oxytocin, that squish, then will give out a big flow of milk, and that's called the milk ejection reflex, or the letdown is what sometimes people call it. It's a warm, fuzzy feeling. It's getting to snuggle with a warm baby. And that is a huge benefit of breastfeeding, even if it's not nutritional. The bonding part of it is a big deal. We call breastfeeding the first immunizations because antibodies are passed from the parent to the baby through the colostrum, that early milk. And so until a kiddo can have a DTaP vaccine, until they can get their tetanus, diphtheria, pertussis vaccinations, I think starting at 6 months, we can protect them by vaccinating the parent and then having the parent breastfeed. So that's a huge deal, protecting them against infection and things around you. I want to take a sec to talk about immunity and breastfeeding because I think it's such a cool factoid.
Yes.
When babies have their first cold or get some sort of sickness, there are viral parts in their saliva, just like any of us, right, that say that our bodies are fighting something. With a breastfeeding infant, if they are going to breast, part of the action of their sucking means that some of their spit washes back into the parent, like backwash, right? It's a little gross, but the cool thing is that the parent's body and immune system can identify those viral parts that the baby is working on and make antibodies for the baby, deliver them back through the breast milk so that it's like personalized medicine. Another example of that is when people get vaccinated that are grown-ups, their bodies are making antibodies for COVID. And one of my favorite examples, and I'll send this to you guys to put up as part of the link. I was a bedside nurse during COVID. And when we first got our vaccines, it was such a big deal. I remember December 21st, 2020, I got my first COVID vaccine and it was a huge moment. I cried. Someone else on my unit was breastfeeding her son at that time and sent me a picture that I share in my lectures of milk that she had pumped before she had gotten the vaccine and milk she had pumped after she had gotten the vaccine. And even visually, they are so different looking, where the baby was, I think, 4 or 5 months old at that point. So it was mature milk, usually like white, almost bluish color. That's a normal color for milk. And then after the vaccine had really started to take effect, it's milky, creamy looking. It was just full of all of these antibodies. And so until we can vaccinate our children for things that are going around, things like COVID-19, we can receive the vaccinations as adults and our bodies can do the hard work and pass those antibodies on to our babies that are breastfeeding. So that is one of the biggest advantages. Other advantages, it's cheaper. You don't have to do anything. A little more time, but it's time intensive, yes, but you're not washing things as much. And it's right there. If you are able to walk around with breasts, then you are able to walk around and have a food source for your baby. So there's less logistical planning that goes on with having a lactating person be a source of food, if not the main source of food for a baby.
Right. Oh my gosh. I am learning so much in this episode. I just feel like my brain is
2 hours. I could talk about this stuff forever. Don't get me started.
I'm like enthralled. Again, I don't have kids and maybe that's like down the line. I don't know, but I'm loving hearing all of this and just how much our bodies are equipped to do this and how much it helps, you know, everyone involved. And so I guess this kind of leads me to the next question about, you know, what happens if you do have a mom or a parent or whoever that just cannot get this to work? Like, does that ever happen? Do you ever have patients that say this just isn't working? And then what do you offer to them?
Yeah.
How can you support them?
There are plenty of reasons why people don't want to breastfeed. or physically can't breastfeed. Sometimes people don't want to because of time, because they're going back to work soon, because of a trauma history, and they don't like their body being exposed in that way, or they don't feel safe to do so. That's so, so normal. There are people that just don't want to, and that's okay too. And then there are people that physically have a more difficult time because of either a lack of tissue that will produce milk. We call that sometimes hypoplastic breast tissue. And it's from the person's own fetal development. There's nothing that we can do to make more tissue that's going to be able to produce milk. So sometimes meet people that have had breast surgery, and I'll have to talk about, like, why did you have this breast surgery? And talking about, well, maybe what you were correcting aesthetically was also a result of there just being less tissue that will lactate, and that's okay. There are other syndromes, things like PCOS, which is polycystic ovarian syndrome. So many people have that. It doesn't automatically mean that people will not be able to make enough milk for their babies, but it is a risk factor just because of different higher levels of estrogen and other kind of, it's a constellation of symptoms. So other times people just characteristically have lower production. And again, going back to the living on the savannah idea, for all of us to make exactly the right amount of milk for our babies at every step along the way doesn't make any evolutionary sense. It is not efficient in any way. And so when I think about us evolving as societally, there would have been people around that had different amounts of milk. And I'm sure everyone can imagine in their life somebody that they know that didn't make enough milk for their baby. And there were other people in their lives that make so much milk that they can fill up a freezer and end up donating it all.
Right.
And that's really how we should be living, is alongside one another. So for us to share milk, for us to have other sources to meet our baby's nutritional needs, is so normal. And I don't think we talk about that nearly as much. Another thing that I talk about all the time in appointments is that you don't have to do all one or all the other. If you want to do some breastfeeding and some pumping, or if you want to do some breastfeeding of your own milk and some formula, that's okay. We have to feed the baby. That's the only rule, is we have to feed the baby. That is required.
Yeah.
You have to feed the baby.
Good rule.
Yeah. How you feed the baby is up to you. And whether that's because of job requirements, where you work in a field where you don't feel like you'll have support, or you work in a job where you have to go back to work right away. Like, it's part of our modern society. There's no wrong way to feed a baby, period.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so good for people to hear. I think just there's no wrong way to do this, and that there's so many different options, and it doesn't have to just be one way. Again, I just feel like this is so validating. And I also love your Sahara Desert or whatever the analogy is.
I
just visualizing
but
it.
Imagine us, like, you know, ye olden days of us humans are supposed to be in small groups. We really are. And multi-generational groups where there's an old lady on the edge of the village, and there are lots of lactating people, and we care for each other's children. Like, that's an easier way for us to be. And it's just not how our society is set up anymore. So trying to remind people that, like, that's your lizard brain. That's, like, where we should be living. Lizards don't lactate, right. But but you know what I mean? Like, that's our base. That's at our core. And so getting help from others, getting other sources, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. Right. You know, you've already left so much information and wisdom on this podcast, but what are some takeaways that you just want to make sure you leave with the listeners? I know you're, you know, such a wealth of information, but if you could just leave a couple, what are those last pieces of wisdom you'd like to leave?
I wrote these down while I was having my Rice Krispies this morning. So
perfect.
It's not all one or all the other. We do combination feeding all the time. And I think we don't talk about that enough, where you can do breast milk and also other sources, and it's okay. It is not a failure of yours. It is not a badge of honor if you can do exclusive breastfeeding. We're all feeding babies, and there's not one or the other. You can do both in any combination that you want to. There's no wrong way to feed a baby. I wrote that down in my notes as well. And the lactation consultants have been around as long as we have been lactating. So reaching out to someone, especially an IBCLC, internationally board certified lactation consultant. What that means is that someone that has those letters after their name has gone through specific education regarding breastfeeding, the physiology, how it works, the normal course of things, how people do it, all of that. It also means that anyone who sits down to take the test that you have to pass has had at least 1,000 hours of bedside, hands-on nursing coaching experience. So it is a really rigorous certification to have. So anyone with those letters after their name, I trust that they have been tested, that they know all of their stuff. It is an ongoing recertification process. We have to keep up with our education in ways that other disciplines don't. So reaching out to an IBCLC specifically is one of the best things that you can do for your breastfeeding journey, really. I think that representation is really important. And something we haven't yet touched on is disparities in breastfeeding. So if you are a person of color that has had a breastfeeding experience, whether it was joyful or whether it was really hard, being a peer counselor can be so important. Having other people around you that look like you, giving you advice and able to relate to you on a cultural and socioeconomic level is so important. So we need so many more providers of color in our spaces, participating in conversations and really welcoming everyone into the table. I love that you started out our talk talking about all kinds of families. And I want to emphasize that there are all sorts of families that lactate or don't lactate, that parent. We have combinations of people that come in here. There's no wrong way to have a family. So I feel so proud that our clinic can support adoptive parents, gestational carriers, parents that have two uteruses, parents that both want to lactate. We do all of that here. So not feeling like just because it's called the mother baby clinic, that all sorts of people are welcome, even if you don't identify as a mother. That's fine. I wish that we could come up with different language that let people know what we do, but also really welcomed people in. So yeah, I think that those are the biggest takeaways.
Yeah, that's so beautiful that you touched on that, that it's so accepting and inclusive, and all of the services that you provide, and how, again, like how welcoming you all are there at the clinic, and Providence is as well. I'm curious, you know, just to kind of add on to that, some of the, you know, how can we help break down, I guess, some of those stigmas, do you think, and really normalize breastfeeding amongst different cultures and families and all, everybody?
I think that could be its own, that could be, yes, an entire conference of how do we do this? How many different, yes, points can we attack this problem? The biggest deal is talking about it, I think. I have so many parents, and I remember when I was first parenting as well, mentioning to other people like, oh, I'm having these issues, I'm having problems, blah, blah, blah. And friends of mine that I had known for years saying, oh yeah, I had that problem too. And thinking, wow, why have we not talked about this before? This is such a big deal right now. And so making sure that we talk about postpartum preparedness, even during pregnancy. I say in my lectures at the Graduate School of Nursing that I give at OHSU, preparing for the birth and not preparing for parenting is like focusing on the wedding and not thinking about the marriage. The birth experience, though really, really transformative and often with lasting results, good and bad for people, depending on their mode of delivery, it is such a short amount of time. It is a few days at most, we hope, of labor delivery, yeah, experience. Postpartum is ongoing. could last a year in terms of how people feel, how when they get their feet under them, there it turns into a marathon and you don't know when the end is in sight. And so making sure that people have others that they can call in their community to fill their freezer, to check in on them electronically or in person, people that they don't have to entertain when they come over to see the baby, people that will unload their dishwasher and cycle their laundry, things like that. Identifying those people in their lives, I feel like, is a part that we really miss in prenatal education and preparing people for this parenting journey. Talking about it as people needing support as a baseline and not as a, oh, well, they really needed lots of help after their baby was born. Everybody needs help. You just did this amazing thing with your body. You might have gone through major surgery. Your body is doing things that it never did before, sometimes ever. And making sure that we as a community know, like, check in on your friends. Don't expect them to keep you up and tell you stories about anything. Leave a dinner on their porch and walk away. Like that's sometimes how you can help people the most. And preparing people to kind of set up those community connections even before they deliver, because it's so important.
Yeah, I appreciate that you are sharing so much about this value of community and like thinking about the parenting journey and the postpartum journey so much. I just had a friend who had a baby and she was articulating to me having somebody coming over and being able to do some of those jobs you just listed, just like little laundry and help with dinners and different things like that, how valuable that was. And not just because they're there to like help, you know, cuddle the baby, but because they're actually there to help run the household. So I think that's so, again, just so valuable for people to hear all of this information. As just kind of a final question before we end the show today, do you have anything, just final words of wisdom or resources or anything you feel called to share to the listeners out there before we wrap up?
Call us. We're here. Mm-hmm. We're so lucky at the Mother Baby Clinic at Providence to have 3 locations that are open 7 days a week. Babies don't know what day it is. They don't know what time they're going to be born. They don't know if it's a major holiday. We are closed 2 days a year, too. So that is Thanksgiving Day and Christmas Day. And besides that, we're here. If you have an emergency, sometimes we can see you on the same day. We have 3 locations that keep those 7 days a week hours so we can serve the Portland area. It is such a unique program. No other hospital system has something as comprehensive and as nimble as we are. And I think that is part of it, is other places have lactation support, but sometimes they can't see people for 2 or 3 weeks just because of the number of people they have employed and the huge demand that there is. We're so lucky at Mother Baby Clinic, Providence, Portland, St. V's, and Willamette Falls that we have people that are ready and there. So the most important thing, I think, is call us, reach out, talk to someone in your life that has lactated, and accept help from people. We as human beings are not meant to do this by ourselves. And I've mentioned that, you know, in the postpartum period, I remember in midwifery school learning about perinatal physiology and how come humans have so much pain with their deliveries. You know, we think about sheep or other animals just walking around chewing whatever it is they're doing, and then they have a baby. They don't look like they're in terrible amounts of distress. And I remember reading a paper from an anthropologic point of view saying, maybe the pain that humans experience or the discomfort they experience during labor and how much it takes you out of regular life is a signal that you need somebody else around. We can't do this by ourselves. Ugh. And so to have people that are really experienced in a very niche, several weeks of this whole kind of continuum of birth and postpartum and then parenting and lactation, let us help. We're here. We're obviously very impassioned about what we do. Can't stop talking to people mm-hmm. about lactating and feeding their babies. And there's a famous story in my family. I was on vacation for the very first time without my son. My best friend and I were in Mexico. We're on the beach and I see a family next to me that is feeding a just a few day old baby. And I, in my really halting Spanish, was like, excuse me, can I help you with anything? Because we, the people that are involved in this sort of care are really impassioned about it and understand what it is you're going through. And we want to help. We can't help ourselves from helping, which is why we're in these jobs. So let us help you, please.
Oh my gosh. You are just a gem. We need so many more of you. If we could just clone you, that would be lovely.
I love my job. So I'm so glad you guys asked me to talk today. It's been a joy. Yeah.
This has been really like a deep and powerful conversation. And for me, and again, I don't have kids, but I have loved everything that you've shared. It's given me such a different level of empathy, a window into what goes on with, you know, the parenting journey, and just been a really rich conversation. I just thank you so much for your transparency, for your knowledge, for your time today. And just as a closing, I want to thank everyone for joining us today on Talk with a Doc. We look forward to continuing the important conversation on health and wellness with more experts from Providence in future episodes. And to get continued information on other important healthcare topics, please subscribe to Talk with a Doc on your favorite podcast platform. And make sure to listen to all of our shows on Lit Live Radio under Future of Health or your favorite podcast platform, and on social media. Connect with us on Facebook, TikTok, and X at Providence. And we also have Instagram and LinkedIn under Providence Health Systems. And to learn more about our mission, programs, and services, go to providence.org. And just once again, thank you so much for listening. And remember that at Providence, we do see the life in you. And thank you for being here today.